to discuss the real issues affecting Australia and New Zealand, this is Trad-Tasman Talk, jointly produced by TheUnshackled.net and The Mr. Berry, Mr. Berry Show. Now here are Tim Wilms and Stephen Berry, live from Melbourne.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Trad Tasman Talk. It is Friday, the 23rd of July, 2021. It is Tim Wilms, Editor-in-Chief of The Unshackled. It is 6 p.m. here in Melbourne.
And I'm Stephen Berry from the Mr. Berry, Mr. Berry Show, also in Melbourne.
Yes, well, it's lockdown number 5 for me, but it's lockdown number 6. For you,
yeah.
Four Auckland lockdowns, and now you've had 2 Melbourne lockdowns.
And I've lost track of where things are going on this one. It doesn't seem to be improving, that's for sure.
Well, as the saying goes, you can check into Victoria most of the time, but now you can't leave, at least to go back to New Zealand with Jacinta Ardern announcing due to the Delta National Tour, sorry, not the Delta Goodrum National Tour, the Delta variant of coronavirus National Tour, which at the moment is keeping Sydney, Victoria, and now South Australia locked down. She's suspending the Trans-Tasman bubble until September. So
I'd rather stay in Melbourne.
Although New Zealand has been, it's had a good run since twin Auckland lockdowns. When was that? It was March this year.
Yeah, and that ended early April, and that's when I started to get my hopes up and started booking my plane tickets out of there. And then they had a Wellington one for once about 6 weeks ago, I think. Wellington went into level 2 and the rest of the country stayed at level 1, if I recall correctly, so that wasn't quite as severe anyway.
Well, there was, it's because one of the Sydney cases visited there, didn't infect anyone. Though, do I have said level 2, it's just slightly more restrictions, but doesn't make a real difference to life in a city.
No, you're essentially just counting the number of people going into the supermarket at level 2.
Hello to everyone in the Unshackled and Mr. Berry YouTube chats. We are also, this week, I'm certain, back on Odyssey. I clicked the button to allow us to stream to Odyssey. Jay, on his week off, he made sure that the stream key was there, so we should be streaming there. Unfortunately, it's hard for me to monitor the Odyssey stream on my iPhone. The app continually crashes, but I'll do my best. Now, we'll try and keep the COVID update relatively brief because you can get COVID news fatigue, especially here in Melbourne, and with 3 states in lockdown, there's press conferences all the time. The 5-day lockdown that started last Friday in Melbourne was extended for another week. Dan Andrews said today we're on the right track. He is optimistic with most of the new cases being in isolation for the entire infectious period, but it's not the same in Greater Sydney. They had their the highest 132 cases with 80 something in the community for some time during their infectious period. A fun slideshow of the Sydney Daily Gladys and Health Hazard press conferences at 11 a.m. every day was, did you hear about the TikTok guy, that comedian who was...
I heard about this, I'd like to see it.
Yes, he was, predicting the numbers the night before. And he claimed that he was using a mathematical equation to predict the numbers the next day, but everyone knew that he had a leak within the New South Wales Health Department. So to flush out the leak, the health department gave all the people they suspected the wrong number, to see, and if he announced that this was a certain number, the wrong number, then they know who leaked it. And he finally got a prediction wrong. This was his statement. John Bernard Karyotz, he called himself the People's Premier. He said that the number confirmed today by the New South Wales government was given solely to discredit my mathematical genius. They claim to have captured the person supposedly leaking the information through high-level surveillance and trapping, which just disrespects the hard work and mathematical processes conducted by my brothers and I. I've been clear that there is no source and any claim otherwise is false, and I doubt Gladys and her government would stoop that low. We all know that the Korotz probability theorem produces the correct answer, as the last week has proven, and the formula is available for the public to use themselves. Please stay tuned for more content on my page. I'll continue uploading great content and possibly even predictions, which he hasn't. He's basically finished now.
So there's no mess into it whatsoever. He's been getting a good leak the whole time.
Yes, and he hasn't had a crack at predicting the mathematical equations since.
Oh, good on him for trying anyway.
So leaks about the case numbers, they're only allowed to go to accredited journalists such as Chris O'Keefe of Channel 9 in Sydney and Raphael Epstein of ABC Melbourne. Only they're allowed to get the official leaks in advance.
That's a bit of a worry, isn't it? Because, I mean, when you think about it, it's a wee bit cheeky, but all he's doing is giving information that we're entitled to have anyway.
Well, exactly. Well, it's in New South Wales, the cutoff of the daily cases is at 8 p.m. the previous night, and they don't announce them for 15 hours more.
So they're completely pointless anyway. And often you'll see figures come out and they'll say whether they include today's figures or not as well. So it's quite meaningless. You got to wonder if they're maybe using that 15-hour gap to try and present the sort of narrative that they want to on that particular day.
And now because Sydney has fallen to lockdowns and gold standard Gladys hotel quarantine and contact tracing has fallen to pieces, the pressure has increased on Scott Morrison about the slow pace of the vaccine rollout, which at the beginning of the year he said is not a race. He said it was not a race to get the vaccines approved, but because there's all this videotape now, a lot of journalists were able to put together that he said it's not a race with regard to the rollout as well. And now a lot of people have accused Scott Morrison of being in hiding because of his limited press conferences, but he's actually been hitting the FM airways the past week. He appeared on what is now the number one radio program in the country last week, the Kyle and Jackie O show, to clear up what really happened at the Enganane Maccas in 1997, I think it was. Do you know about this this urban legend about Scott Morrison at the Enganane Maccas?
No, this sounds fascinating.
Yeah, so this began in 2019, this rumour, that in 1997 I should actually make sure that I get the date. It was either 1997 or 1998. It was the year that his NRL team, the Cronulla Sharks, were in the grand final, which they lost. And Enganane is a Macca's stop on the outskirts. It's just outside the metro area of Greater Sydney in the southwest. And the urban legend is that he shat his pants at this.
Oh, he's a man of the people, isn't he? Who hasn't shit their pants at McDonald's?
And so for the first time on, well, the number one rating show in Australia, because Kyle and Jackie O, they've filled the void left when Alan Jones retired from 2GB. He still does his Sky News program, but is retired from radio. So it's important for our leaders, I guess, to go on this program and answer the hard questions and not turn a brown eye to the number one rating show. And so
it's a bit more frivolous now.
Yeah, so he was asked about this by Kyle and Jackie O about this rumor directly, and he finally denied it, saying that yeah, it's all a load of rubbish. But I did think that it was hilarious how this rumor took off, and I just let it run its course. Which I know from personal experience that well, I've had baseless rumors spread about me, but I know that, what is it, just let them run their course. And there's the old saying, it's better to be talked about than not be talked about, even if it's...
Oh, I completely agree. I had a rumor going for over a year that I steal cans of tuna off people. So I just went with it and started filming myself stealing cans of tuna.
And now Kyle and Jackie O, they're on the KISS radio network, and apparently since because the Kyle and Jackie O interview was so successfully went on the Melbourne KISS radio show with Jason and PJ, but what is it, Jace got pretty stuck into him about the vaccine rollout and asked him to apologize. He asked the Prime Minister to simply say sorry, which Scott Morrison did eventually say at a press conference this week. He initially said he expressed regret, and now he said he was sorry that the vaccine rollout hadn't gone as well as everyone hoped. Express regret is, well, that's the best form of non-apology. But I'm sorry this hasn't worked out the way, basically. Well, it implies, how was I supposed to know that this would go so awry?
Yeah, well, I managed to get my first vaccine 2 weeks ago, the AstraZeneca one, because nobody wants to touch it now, so I guess it was very easy to get. There was a lot of theatrics getting this vaccination compared to any that I've had before. A whole lot of questions about side effects, and then she walked out of the room and came back in the room with a needle, and it was truly the most terrifying vaccination I've ever had. And normally I don't care about needles or anything like that.
Yes, the AstraZeneca vaccine, which is locally produced in Australia, has, well, it's had public confidence in it completely shot to pieces by the, what is it, advisory group ATAGI, which says it's the... Pfizer is the preferred vaccine for under 60s because of the rare blood clotting condition, which there were two deaths associated with of Australians in their 40s linked to the AstraZeneca vaccine. And Scott Morrison's basically been begging ATAGI to revise its advice given the Delta national tour, which has again caused all this frenzied political jibing in the COVID social media, and also state of origin arguments, because Melbourne people are saying, "Oh, Sydney needs to do a Melbourne style lockdown. This is still a mockdown lockdown light." Certainly the situation in Sydney, it just seems to be stagnated at the moment. But I know that a lot of Australians, to take their mind off the fact that, well, half of them are in lockdown, there's heaps of local reality TV to watch. Survivor Australia started this week. There's the Farmer Wants a Wife and the Bachelor Australia. And soon there'll be the very already controversial Big Brother VIP, which, well, it was supposed to have British media personality Katie Hopkins on, but because she mocked the current Australian COVID situation, she had her visa cancelled, contract cancelled by Channel 7 and was deported.
Do you know how she actually breached her quarantine?
She was joking about doing that. I discussed this on my Monday Tim's News Explosion. I actually was lucky enough to have Katie Hopkins as a guest on Wilms Front last year. It's one of the highlights of my time at the Unshackled. She was absolutely pleasant, far from the biggest bitch in Britain as she is known. But she does this, weekly live stream on Instagram, the Katie's Arms, where there's a lot of crass humour on it. And this was one of her proposals. She was fined $1,000 because she wasn't wearing a mask in a certain circumstance in the hotel there.
Oh, right. Oh, that's quite minor. And it sounds like Big Brother's actually going to be crap now, because that must have been the best star.
Well, they've got Caitlyn Jenner, who for some reason is taking time to come here rather than running for governor of California. And then there's, Meghan Markle's, I think, half-brother who's coming as well.
That's a nobody. That's a bit of a nobody, isn't it?
Yes, I mean,
local
C&D list celebrities who could go on this Big Brother VIP. I mean, they managed to get a whole bunch of low-hanging celebrities, lowbrow celebrities for I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here over a year.
it's quite sad, isn't it? Nothing sums up your career is over.
Is basically they get a whole bunch of celebrities who were probably well known about 10, 15 years ago, and everyone's like, oh, I remember you. You were like big back then, and you're back now on this show.
It's like having Shortland Street actors on Dancing with the Stars in New Zealand. That's once they do the first couple of series, there's nobody left who's worth having on it, and it dies again.
I do know that they were, this was a number of years back, planning an Australian version of Wife Swap, and they asked local conservative/patriot activists Bernard Gaynor and Neil Erickson to participate in them, which they both declined.
I could do it, but I'd probably disappoint everybody else.
All right, that's the COVID update done. Let's now go to the race for the 2032 Olympic Games, which the city of Brisbane was the only serious bid there, but Anastasia Palaszczuk, the Queensland Premier, the Sports Minister Richard Colbeck, and the Lord Mayor of Brisbane decided it was still important to go over to Japan just to make sure that that Brisbane definitely did get the games. It reminded me then, I'm not sure if people are aware, I know a lot of the Simpsons episodes off by heart, but when Homer gets that award for outstanding achievement in the field of excellence, he's told in advance, and when it's announced, he's like, please, 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 please. It's like, Dad, you're already won. He's like, please don't jinx it. I'm sure our NSL like that. Now, given the situation in Australia at the moment, the celebrations to Brisbane winning the 2032 Games were nothing compared to the elation when Sydney won the 2000 Olympics back in 1993. I'll just play that for our audience now, that announcement in 1993.
The winner is Sydney, Australia.
The reaction of New South Wales Premier John Fay said it all. Sydney had won in the fourth round, defeating Beijing by just two votes, 45-43.
Well, there's good cause to be proud when you beat Beijing by two votes.
Two votes, yes. It was that, and that was a competitive one as well. It wasn't a default win. And so this was...
Was there anybody else in the race? at all?
Well, Brisbane didn't win all the votes. There were 72 out of 80. There were 5 no votes and 3 abstentions. So, okay. 8 IOC delegates still were that anti-Australian that they just didn't want to award Brisbane the games.
That must have been the communist delegates.
Yes, but this was the scene in Tokyo with the announcement, not quite as elating as 1993, as you'll see.
The International Olympic Committee has the honour to announce that the Games of the 35th Olympiad are awarded to Brisbane, Australia.
That reminds me of sitting at the front of the audience at a candidate debate during the 2014 election cheering on the ACT Party. I was Scott Morrison.
It's not as much fun if, you've got to wear a mask and socially distance at the announcement.
No, you can't hug anyone.
Yes, and also if you know that, you've won by default there. Because with the Tokyo Olympics, because the city is under a state of emergency, there's no spectators or anything. Everyone's wearing a mask everywhere. Like it reminds me of when the U.S. governors during November and December last year were even giving press conferences with masks on. Just looks ridiculous.
Yeah, well, you can't hear what they're saying, and the speaker doesn't really need to have a mask with the social distancing anyway, though I've never seen sanitising the microphone in between, which is, you start noticing all these little things, you become somewhat germophobic once you've been through 6 lockdowns, don't you?
Now, it was the actual aftermath of the announcement which caused the most chatter in Australia when Australian Olympic Committee Chair John Coates ordered the Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk to attend the Tokyo opening and closing ceremony when she hasn't planned to.
You are going to the opening ceremony. I'm still the Deputy Chair of the Canada Leadership Group. And so far as I understand that there will be an opening and a closing ceremony in 2032, and all of you have got to get along there and understand the traditional parts of that, what's involved in an opening ceremony. So now none of you are staying behind and hiding in your rooms, all right?
We've been playing some footage this morning from a press conference overnight where John Coates was pretty insistent about you turning up at the opening ceremony. It's a bit tricky to work out what's going on when you've got masks on. We don't know what's happening behind those masks. You didn't look happy about the exchange. What was it all about?
Oh, no. I've known John for years. So what's happened now is that the Lord Mayor and the Federal Minister and I are expected to go. So I will leave that to John Coates and Thomas Bach, but let me make it very clear. I am not going to offend anyone now that we've just been awarded the Games.
See, if I was in her position, I would have said, hey, hang on here. You're not the Premier of Queensland, so maybe settle down a bit and I'll tell you whether I'm going.
Australia's multi-award-winning wealth manager, returning a current...
Sorry there. Keep going.
Yeah, I mean, she should have put the foot into him because his behaviour there, I think, was very inappropriate in terms of how he treated the Premier of Queensland. But it's not a gender thing. It's not a gender thing. What I dislike is that it's turned into a gender thing. Someone's mansplaining, etc. It's not. He's just a jerk. And he would have been a jerk to anybody else in that position.
Well, he's been in that role for 31 years. And, in his mind, he's won Australia two Olympics, hosting two Olympics, Sydney in 2000 and now Brisbane in 2032. So he's probably quite pleased with himself there, and that's his, well, probably his ego there saying, you are going there, you know, you've got to learn the ropes about what is a good opening and closing ceremony. Because, well, maybe he also knows how there was quite a few hiccups in the 2018 Gold Coast Commonwealth Games where, well, first for the opening ceremony, they printed the wrong date on the tickets, and for the closing ceremony, they didn't feature any of the athletes there, which was a total break with tradition there. So maybe that was at the back of his mind there. You're not going to stuff this up like you did with the Commonwealth Games.
But then again, 31 years in the same job, I start seriously questioning my sanity if I'm in the same role for 2 years.
So Australia's done, well, this will be done well with the Olympics in terms of hosting and well, medals won as well. This will be Australia's third Olympics after, well, there was also Melbourne in 1956, the first Summer Olympics in the Southern Hemisphere. And given that Brisbane won it by default, it's definitely easier and a lot cheaper than trying to win the FIFA World Cup, which Australia tried to win either the 2018 or 2022 FIFA World Cups, but got one vote. And of course, Russia and Qatar were the winners of those respective World Cups there. And as we later found out, well, the bribe needed to be right to win the FIFA World Cup.
Yeah, and well, FIFA's infamous for that sort of methodology, aren't they?
And now, speaking of soccer, the Olympic soccer games have already started there, and the Australian women's national team, the Matildas, have caused controversy by deciding to pose before the game with the Aboriginal flag, not the Australian flag, which, well, I think to do only pose with the Aboriginal flag is very divisive there. And it hasn't surprised me that Pauline Hanson, One Nation leader, put out a statement saying Matilda should stick with soccer and represent all Australians there. And, well, they seem to be trying to outwoke the US women's soccer team, which I think only three of them stood for the national anthem. The others knelt.
New Zealand outworked them all, though. The entire New Zealand soccer team took the knee versus Australia, and they got absolutely smashed by Australia. Kiwis are saying, well, no wonder they lost with that woke bullshit. And, well, that's not quite true. They lost because they're crap. But the woke bullshit certainly makes that loss much more satisfying for New Zealanders. And they have Korea in their following match, though.
Now, are you rooting for Larelle Hubbard, the New Zealand trans weightlifter, to bring home the gold for your nation?
No, I'm not. I think it would be incredibly unfair and a terrible injustice for her to take home that gold medal with all the physical advantages that she has as a result of previously being a male. So, no, I'm not. And I think it would be terrible for the Olympic Games in the long term. It would set a terrible precedent as well. And I think it would take the dignity out of the Games if you have someone who's previously been a male winning gold medals. I mean, I'm very, very liberal on transgender issues. I mean, call yourself what you like, change to what you like. I really don't care. But competing against woman, a biological woman in these events, I think is quite an injustice.
So as history has shown, a lot of the female winners have been on certain types of enhancing substances. There's been obviously a lot of positive COVID tests at the Tokyo Olympics, but there was also a positive cocaine test by Australian equestrian rider Jamie Kermond. So he's been banned from the Olympics, which, well, that was something out of left field. Everyone is so focused on, well, the COVID test of the athletes there that, well, this other positive test popped up from there.
Well, even crazier is the, I think it was an American runner who's been disqualified for cannabis. There's nothing performance enhancing about cannabis, so I think that was a bit unfair. But was he giving the horse cocaine? How much difference does it make? He's riding it, unless he's trying to lose weight.
I'm not sure of the specifics, but it was just one of those. Yeah, it just came out of left field. It's like those were the days when that was the wildest story in the Olympics, not COVID and trans athletes.
I have seen some cases in greyhound racing where they're giving meth to the dogs, so I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me, but I'm not so sure that this equestrian rider's actually cheated.
And now the only sort of race that New Zealand is involved in as well, to put more race politics into your, well, society and education system there, where I'll let you explain.
Yes, so there's been a bit of swinging back over whether we're teaching white privilege in schools, and the Labor government is obfuscated about it, of course, but because white privilege isn't necessarily labelled in the education curriculum itself. However, the training that the teachers are getting to deliver this curriculum absolutely does include messages of white privilege. It's teaching those that hear the message and are white may feel guilt or shame, and those are a normal reaction. There's nothing in here about outrage and being really, really annoyed, which is, I would have thought, would also be a normal reaction. Out of the 4,000 staff at the Ministry of Education since 2018, 2,500 of them have attended courageous conversations about race.
Courageous,
yeah. and conversations as well. Everything's a conversation with the radical left these days, followed up by a Molotov cocktail. And we've managed to uncover that the American company which is delivering this training to teachers is trying to cover up their tracks and remove information from education websites after it's been obtained by the ACT Party. And we've actually got an email now showing that there's been dialogue between the American company delivering that course and Chris Hipkins trying to sanitize things because they're being found out by the ACT Party.
And now Chris Hipkins, isn't he also the health minister as well?
Yes, he has a lot of portfolios.
He was the one that said last week, even though New Zealand is doing worse than Australia when it comes to the vaccine rollout, he was already following the Biden administration line of going door to door. And the fact that Jacinta gets away with, well, her poor vaccine rollout, there's a meme for that where it says, Australia has administered 36 vaccine doses per 100 people. What a disaster. And New Zealand has administered 29 vaccine doses per 100 people. Jacinta Ardern is the best, because, of course,
that could be an Australian writing that meme there.
Because Saint Jacinta does nothing wrong.
No. And, well, she fronts the good news stories and she leaves the bad news ones for her ministers. Chris Hipkins probably isn't the most incompetent minister there, which I guess is why he's got such major portfolios. Education and health, that's an enormous workload. But it also just illustrates how little talent there is in the Labor Party if one man's got to take such enormous portfolios.
And you've been involved in a news story of your own over the past week.
Yes, it was the 35th anniversary of homosexual law reform passing in New Zealand in 1986. That was being celebrated a couple of weeks ago. But not everybody wanted to celebrate. A 20-year-old, shall we say, black, indigenous people, other colour, LGBT activist, Chenille Lowell, wrote a lengthy post on Facebook saying that he does not celebrate these because it's only the white queers who benefit from white supremacy who have anything to celebrate, and they should be indebted to the black queers for all the rights they have now. And
when they decriminalised homosexuality in New Zealand, if I took that person's word, apparently there was like different. The law was different for different races of homosexuals.
Well, that sounds like it, doesn't it? But no, that's not the case. He's also been instrumental in getting racial seats on the board of Rainbow Youth, which is a charity to support vulnerable young gay people. So they have two Māori seats, one Pacific seat, one Asian seat. They hope to be introducing one black seat. I would have thought you'd have a seat for a gay person and a lesbian and a transgender person and another 72 for all the other genders.
Bisexual, pansexual, asexual, gender fluid.
Yeah, that would make much more sense to me. But, I mean, that's by the by. The main concern for me is following some comments from the pioneers of the homosexual law reform movement, who actually created the platform that Chenille Lowell gets to spew his hate from now, were obviously not very pleased with that sort of comments he's made. They told him so, and then he just started sending out a slurry of abuse towards these people who actually put in the mahi 35 years ago to create the environment in which now he could spout off that crap. So I started a petition demanding that Rainbow Youth remove him from his board because, quite frankly, I don't think a intersectional racist activist is the appropriate person to have on a board that is meant to be supporting vulnerable gay youth. And young people can be impressionable at that age. I mean, I turned into a libertarian, but odds are they're going to turn into intersectional racist as well. Following this position, Gay Express magazine, which has a print copy and an online website, gayexpress.co.nz, they did an article about Lau's comments and about my petition. That lasted for about 48 hours before hundreds upon hundreds of SJW extremists just vomited abuse onto Gay Express's Facebook page. And now my petition also got removed because I misgendered Chenille Lowell as he instead of they/them. That's hate speech apparently, but comments about white supremacy aren't. But I put another petition up now requesting that Rainbow Youth remove him from the board. And should they fail to do so, we'll start talking to the sponsors of Rainbow Youth and asking them if they want their brands associated with the sort of vile, disgusting racism that Chenille is peddling.
It sounds like you've been having quite a bit of fun with this petition, just highlighting it used to be called reverse racism, but it's just now it should be just called plain racism and hate speech, anti-white racism.
Yeah, and I've taken a bit of flack from some on the right for my comments on how Lee Williams has been treated, because I believe that cancel culture actually is the way that free speech self-regulates, because freedom of association and private property rights also are part of a free society. Free speech just doesn't exist in a vacuum. And they've said, well, you know, you've got to ditch those principles and just go after our opponents. And I wasn't willing to do that, so I've actually gone after a racist on the left using cancel culture and using the tactics that I think are legitimate in a in a free society.
Savage Nobles and Merry Peasants has written on entropy, which if you want to go and leave a comment there or ask a question or send through a super chat, that's where you need to go. We have a Q&A at the end of the program. He said here, ha ha ha, Chenille the eel, slippery Dumby. I don't celebrate it, but Lau will cry about everything and anything with great vigour.
And he's got Labour Party MPs now endorsing the wonderful work he's doing on their Facebook pages too, Maya Lubick and the Upper Harbour Labour MPs. So I don't think they're aware of these comments, but I posted them on their Facebook pages today just to make sure.
I know that, what is it, Douay, who's much more conservative than you, wrote on his Telegram that he, with the way things are at with the LGBT agenda in 2021, reflected whether it was wise, the 1986 homosexual law reform.
Well, I guess we've got to the stage where there's nothing to fight for in terms of homosexual rights anymore. And the pioneers who did all the work 35 years ago, as far as I can see, they're quite happy to just celebrate the way things are now. Those are the ones who have been supporting the regular rainbow parades that go through Ponsonby every February, not the ones who have decided that these rainbow parades are too corporate and too white supremacist and too friendly to the police and have gone and done their own SJW Nazi sort of parade. So there's a strong element of the people who actually achieve something now just wanting to enjoy their achievement, as opposed to other people who have absolutely no idea or gratitude for the environment that they live in now, just wanting to tear it all down.
Now, as you and I both know, the COVID pandemic has seen governments spend more money, hence waste more money in the effort of propping up the economy, saving jobs and businesses during lockdowns. Therefore, it's hardly a surprise the federal government's wage subsidy program of the last year, JobKeeper, went to a lot of firms who didn't need this corporate welfare because they didn't actually have a downturn in revenue. There was an excellent story on ABC 730 last night, which comments that rolled out urgently amid the initial lockdowns last year, the scheme allowed businesses to claim taxpayer support based on actual or projected loss of turnover. So if they projected that they were going to have more than a 30% loss of turnover, they could get JobKeeper payments for themselves and their employees. And so it's hardly surprising that many businesses claimed for billions of dollars in government support didn't end up experiencing a big drop in turnover, in some cases actually increased. And some businesses decided to actually voluntarily repay JobKeeper payments, but some haven't. The notable Harvey Norman, electronics retailer owned by Jerry Harvey, that received a number of millions of dollars in JobKeeper, which it didn't need, and JobKeeper Josh Frydenberg, the treasurer, said although it'd be good if corporations who didn't need it paid it back, there's no obligations because the purpose of the scheme was to just get money out the doors because we didn't know which companies were going to fail and jobs were going to be lost, which is a complete contrast with a horrific robo-debt welfare collection program where, using this flawed formula of income averaging, they went after vulnerable welfare recipients claiming that they owed money to the government because they'd been overpaid, and a lot of them committed suicide over this scheme there. government made a $1.2 billion settlement to the victims of robo-debt. And again, sorry seems to be the hardest word for the government. The previous social services minister, Stuart Robert, who is a ally of Scott Morrison, said, "Oh, it's not really our fault because Labor used income averaging previously, even though robo-debt was our program."
Yeah, well, that's a bit unfair. Often I'll see the memes saying about welfare rip-offs, and then they'll go, "Oh, but look at the people not paying their taxes." And I'll go, "Well, one is one person's money and the other isn't." But this is actually quite horrific, isn't it? And I think in terms of the businesses that didn't need that support, well, the government's actually created the program like that, and they haven't broken the rules. And it's been a similar case in New Zealand with several businesses, though some have paid it back because it's actually good marketing. But yeah, to treat welfare beneficiaries who don't have the deep pockets or the ability to borrow millions of dollars to cover them over a lean period, that's really disgraceful.
And it's also not good for the federal government's image to say we're going to go after these vulnerable welfare recipients to recoup a measly sum of money. But hey, retailers like Harvey Norman, they can keep all those payments that they didn't need, and it was never our intention to. Basically, what Josh Frydenberger said, we just wanted to throw a bunch of whole money at the economy, if it fell to companies that didn't need it. Oh, well, that's just an unfortunate side effect. But this is what gets me with the current lockdowns, the Labor Party saying that JobKeeper should be restored, even though they know all of the flaws in the JobKeeper program. So you've highlighted all these flaws in this program. Your supporters don't like that people got JobKeeper, businesses did when they didn't need it. Oh, but you still want JobKeeper back.
Well, I can understand businesses not really knowing how to measure what the impact of COVID might have been in the first couple of lockdowns. That's not an excuse anymore. But for individuals whose ability to work is switched on and off like a tap every time there's COVID cases, and that can't even be predicted, they don't have finance departments or accountants or anything to help them with that. So making those sorts of mistakes if you're a low-wage worker is almost expected. So to treat them in this way is really appalling.
And now another area where the Morrison government previously wasted, or should I say deliberately misallocated funds, was with their sports rorts program, which were targeted at in the lead up to the 2019 election to either seats the Liberals wanted to hold or wanted to win. The grants that were proposed by the sports body, Sports Australia, Scott Morrison's office overruled that and came up with their own spreadsheets of sporting clubs that they wanted to give free government money to. Now there's been a second rort scandal that's been exposed by the National Audit Office, the Urban Congestion Fund, which is now being called the car park rorts. And this is even worse than sports rorts, given that they announced funding for car parks in a lot of electorates in marginal areas of Melbourne. They announced funding for car parks, which there had been no consultation, no local proposals to build some. And in fact, the land had been put aside by the local or state government for other projects. So these funding projects were announced but have not come to fruition because they just weren't feasible. So this is even worse. They announced all this funding for projects which actually could not be built, and without any consultation with the local community, they were just what are termed announceable. So this is actually worse than sports rorts.
Yeah, that looks dodgy as hell. I covered that a few weeks ago on my show as well. It reminds me a bit of the Labor government shovel-ready projects. I don't know why shovel-ready projects need funding, because by their nature, shovel-ready, they have funding. But none of the shovel-ready projects are actually going anywhere else once they've had the funding allocated. It's a wee bit like the mental health budget announcement they did a couple of years ago, $1.9 billion over 5 years to sort out mental health. That's funded 5 beds and 3 places in a drug rehab centre. $1.9 billion over 2 years so far. They're too incompetent to even spend the money. But I guess we should be a little bit grateful for that, actually.
Well, it seems to me, because the actual outcomes of these funding projects, they're marginal, and so all the funding just seems to go into a black hole or just goes to more bureaucracy. But of course, the ultimate effect is, well, more debt, more waste of taxpayers' money. When we had the federal budget a couple of months ago, Josh Frydenberg announcing all this mental health funding, aged care funding, all of these billions of dollars, I was one of those people who fell off my chair. It's money that we don't have, and is this going to actually lead to better outcomes?
Yeah, I could see why they did the aged care one, because there was some reports on the aged care sector which were really horrific results, so maybe that was worth doing. But a lot of it is just barefaced, blatant cash throwing at things, and that's at all levels of government. In Melbourne, we've got the scheme where if you spend between $50 and $500 on dinner in central Melbourne, you can claim 20% off, and that's paid for by the state government. It's quite obscene.
Yeah, or New South Wales, they had there was hospitality vouchers as well, and also in Victoria, the regional travel vouchers as well, which is, again, it's the governments that's ordered businesses to close, limited people's ability to travel. Here's some money to compensate you for the consequences of our decisions.
Yeah, and now go travel and spend time with other people and catch COVID again.
Now, obviously, during Melbourne's extended 112-day second wave lockdown, the conduct of Victoria Police in enforcement and suppressing dissent was widely scrutinised, with a lot of concerning incidents and actions. The actual worst during that second lockdown was not a Victoria Police action related to the lockdowns. It was related to their response to a mental breakdown by a man who tried to seek treatment at a mental health facility, a local hospital, but had to wait like 36 hours there. So basically, he had a huge episode there, and Victoria Police chased him around the suburbs. One police officer hit him with a police vehicle, and one stomped on his head. The deputy commissioner in charge of internal affairs, Neil Patterson, announced an investigation into their police misconduct. The officer who stomped on his head was suspended with pay, and the officer who rammed him with a car had his car driving privileges removed, was still allowed to go to work. Well, this was the findings of the independent broad-based anti-corruption commission just last Friday night.
Police won't be punished over the violent arrest of a father while he was suffering a mental health episode in Epping. Shocking footage showed officers stomping on the man's head and hitting him with their car.
hard to watch.
Am I witnessing this?
Yeah. 32-year-old Tim was stomped in the head and rammed with a patrol car in Epping last year.
Tim's reaction was one of shock and bewilderment.
The father of three, agitated and distressed after waiting 19 hours for mental health treatment at the Northern Hospital. Today, the state's corruption watchdog found police acted lawfully, saying the victim's actions had the potential to endanger himself, members of the community and the officers involved.
My reaction was one of disbelief, to be honest. I couldn't believe that IBAC, having seen that footage clear as day, could find that that sort of violent conduct was somehow lawful.
The commissioner said police unsuccessfully used less forceful actions, including capsicum spray and a baton strike, before escalating their response. Tim's physically recovered, but he's still traumatised by what happened. He doesn't accept today's findings and he's planning to launch a civil case.
What should have happened here is that IBAC, like the rest of the community, should have watched the footage and should have brought charges against that officer for assault and battery.
The investigation highlighting the need for officers to receive dedicated mental health training.
Unfortunately, Victoria Police are not well suited to responding to people with mental health issues.
Tracy Macbeth, 7 News.
So let me get that straight. He's been run over with a car and kicked on the head because he's a danger to his own safety.
Yes, that was the finding, that police acted lawfully in subduing, restraining him.
That's appalling, isn't it?
Yeah, and where are the usual activists against police brutality who organised those, Black Lives Matter rallies? If he was Aboriginal or if he was an African American man over in the States, there'd be way more scrutiny, outrage about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Was that during lockdown as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, I think, about late September or early October 2020.
Yeah, and in Auckland they were having Black Lives Matter protests at the same time, despite lockdown restrictions, and, the police just let them go for it.
And what also popped into my newsfeed here, assault charge against a senior cop, this Detective Inspector Darren Cooper, were dropped as it was not in the public interest. So many in the force question whether the outcome would have been different for a lower-ranked officer or a member of the public. It also appears at odds with a campaign by the Police Association, tougher and more consistent penalty for those who attack emergency service workers while on duty. So he was subject of an internal investigation by Professional Standards Command after an alleged altercation with fellow police officers in Wantirna in 2019. He was allegedly acting erratic on the Burwood Highway after a social event at a sporting club, placed in the back of a divisional van before kicking the doors and calling 000 from inside the vehicle. He was charged with assaulting emergency service worker, using profane language and being drunk in a public place. Well, actually, being drunk in a public place now is now legal in Victoria because to prevent Aboriginals being arrested and put into custody if they're found to be drunk in public. However, all three charges were withdrawn on April 30. Victoria Police said the decision to drop the case had been made by the Office of Public Prosecutions, determining proceedings were not in the public interest. But apparently he'll still face an internal disciplinary investigation. Now, comparing this, what happens here with Victorian investigations and action against police misconduct, the officers who were involved in subduing George Floyd in the lead up to his death, they were all fired immediately. Charges were laid, and so that there was basically instant reaction from the local police department. But in Victoria, it's a process that drags on for years, and basically, not much happens.
And these phrases like public interest or common good or society even generally just result in a shit deal for individuals.
Yeah, it's when you see the stories, the findings of alleged misconduct that have just shown, it doesn't fill you with confidence that if you do encounter in your own life a rogue police officer, that there's going to be accountability for that.
No, it doesn't. And it just further reduces public confidence in the police. And, you know, I like to back the police have got a tough job, and I like to think their job is protecting me, but this certainly makes it more difficult to have that sort of trust in our police force.
Especially during, these, as they're called, unprecedented times, when the police are given, the role of enforcing public health orders. And although in the recent Victorian lockdowns, the Victoria Police have been, they've mainly focused their attention on, preventing anti-lockdown protests. We haven't had in Victoria any of the police commissioners show up to Dan's press conferences saying, "You will all comply. We issued this many fines." There's none of that here in Victoria anymore, maybe because Victorians are basically being beaten into submission, into compliance, that they don't need the police commissioner there. But you have in New South Wales, at the Daily Gladys every day, the deputy commissioner, Gary Warboy, is there saying that we issued over 100 fines to people breaching public health orders there. And there's been numerous examples of police overreach and enforcing public health orders in Sydney. They're averaging over 100 fines per day up there. So clearly, the New South Wales Police, they need to,
covered a case on Tuesday when there were 7 tickets issued because they came across a young man sitting outside an office, and he brought the police inside the office where there were 6 others, and they were celebrating a birthday party. And the deputy commissioner said, "There's no excuse for this. Birthdays aren't an excuse. Parties aren't an excuse. Getting drunk's not an excuse." I mean, they all sound like fantastic excuses for parties to me, but that's highly subjective and really discards any values that anyone else in Sydney may have.
This is why I don't call the lockdowns due to COVID outbreaks a public health response. I always refer to it as a police state response, because compliance is always deemed the key.
Yeah, and even Victoria is a bit overzealous. I mean, once the threats dropped down in my 5th lockdown, you're still stuck wearing a mask, walking around outside where there's no chance of...
That's always the stupidest rule of any Victorian lockdown. We'll see if it lifts next Tuesday, or at the end of next Tuesday. Gladys has already said the Sydney lockdown restrictions will probably last for August, September, October. So it's up there, which is why they're talking about all of this fast tracking of the vaccines, tweaking the period between jabs, encouraging more AstraZeneca as well. But yes, we will see. We'll see what the next week brings. I'll see you in a fortnight. Dewey is back co-hosting the show next week with myself. I assume he'll give us the things that he's following at the moment are the turf wars in New Zealand with the trans-exclusionary radical feminists versus the third and fourth wave feminists, and the latest in the They Are Us pre-production film.
Oh, yeah, that's very, very interesting.
I would like to, just before we end the show, it's your last chance to just enter a super chat or a question on entropy. Comment on the passing of John Cornell at the age of 80. He was Paul Hogan's business partner. You would know who Paul Hogan is. Most famous accidental Australian comedian, the hilarious, politically incorrect Paul Hogan show in the 70s and 80s, which led to the Crocodile Dundee films of the 80s and 90s. John Cornell was basically the one who basically said, after he initially got his fame on the New Faces program, hey, you can become a really big, funny celebrity comedian. And what is it? John Cornell on the Paul Hogan show played Strop, who was a pervy, nerdy lifeguard. And he ended up marrying the stereotypical bimbo of the show, Delvin Delaney. She cared for John in his later years when he suffered from Parkinson's, which he has passed from at the age of 80. And what a pioneer, and helped produce politically incorrect humor before it was completely banned. And what is it? It's hard to get your hands on a copy of the Paul Hogan Show DVD since the era of cancel culture. They're one of the things that are selling on eBay for like hundreds of dollars, along with Chris Lee's Summer Heights High and Jonah from Tonga.
Yeah, well, that's a bit more familiar to me, but I can see why cancel culture went for it. I'm surprised it lasted so long, actually. I think it must have been when it finally became its own show, it was a blackface thing rather than one character.
So rest in peace, John Cornell. Born like I said, adios, Strop there. Paul Hogan, he is still going strong at 80. So what is it? He's still in Hollywood, where he lives.
Did he do another film?
He did. What is it? It was a half film, half documentary on Amazon. The amazing Mr. Dundee on Amazon.
Right.
And he still got it as well. Still speaks in interviews hilariously off the cuff. He made all of his hilarious speeches off the cuff as well.
I'm gonna go and seek out that docuseries then.
If you got Amazon Prime subscription,
I do.
All right, everyone. Thanks for watching. Please enjoy your weekend if you can. If you're in one of the free states of Australia, go out and explore the outdoors. I just hope that you're in the next week. If you're in one of those open areas of Australia, you don't get subjected to the pingdemic, which has happened in Melbourne, Sydney, and Adelaide, which is occurring in the UK, which you might not, where you're deemed a close contact by a text message from the health department and you have to isolate for 14 days. The pingdemic in the UK is leading to, panic buying at supermarkets again, even though they've had their Freedom Day then. And in South Australia, people are being pinged as close contacts. They're not actually allowed to isolate at their homes. They have to go to the many hotels, the quarantine centres, camps, whatever you want to call them.
I guess that's the way they deal with hotels being constantly emptied out by all this instability.
All right, so take care, everyone. Take care of yourselves. Take care of those around you. And stay safe and stay sane. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Trad Tasman Talk. To keep up with the latest real news and analysis from the Tasman Nations, visit theunshackles.net and rightminds.nz.